it is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Schertenlieb, Ken Laird, and our buddy Ted will be back with us on Monday. You can call us at 617-779-7937. Also go to the Odyssey app. You can launch yourself a take grenade there. Just press that little microphone button and leave us a message. And we usually play those in the 5 o'clock hour. We are about a little less than an hour away from Chad Tracy, your manager for the Boston Red Sox. He's going to be joining us. Also, Rob Bradford.
He's 500, by the way. His record is now an even Steven 500.
Is he? What was Cora's record when he was ejected?
Something in 17.
Okay. I mean, listen, this has been a nice couple of weeks for Chad Tracy. It's been good talking to him. The team's been
10-17.
He was 10. Oh, so Cora was 10-17.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Chad Tracy making a case.
I'm telling you.
Making a case.
That doesn't add up. He must be. Oh, yeah. 41-48. That adds up.
All right. There we go. Not bad. Yeah. The A's have been stacking them up lately. Also, we're going to have Jeremy Fowler on as well. And I do want to quickly get to this because it is kind of wild how, like, randomly, we were talking about Tatum and Jaylen Brown and whether or not they got along. I don't think that their relationship had much to do with the fact that they're not playing together anymore. I think it goes a lot deeper than that. I do, however, believe that the relationship between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady had a lot to do with why they aren't playing together anymore, or they weren't playing together and they ended up splitting apart.
I mean, the fact that Belichick drafted Jimmy G to be a successor and wanted to trade Brady or get rid of him or cut him, or, you know,
that Wickersham story about how they locked Jimmy Garoppolo out of the TB12 facility is amazing. Like one of just the, it's one of the best stories. It truly is great. And how everything was weird with Alex Guerrero and Bill Belichick was like pissed off at Alex Guerrero. That was a great era. Was a great era. Oh my God, I can't believe this is all going on. Like, it was. And then, you know, it was so funny.
And
was
people didn't believe it, by the way.
No.
Blamed Wickersham, said you're making this up, whatever.
And then he was right.
And he was right.
And then, like, basically it's all been confirmed, all of that.
Confirmed. Gronk was sitting down at dinner, at breakfast with Wickersham and giving him all the info. Like, yep. It was unreal.
So we all knew that it was all going on behind the scenes. And maybe, just maybe, a couple years from now, we might hear more about Jaylen and Jason. But I don't think there's any more to it than what we're hearing. I really don't.
No, you're wrong. Always more.
I did, however.
Except Malcolm Butler. That's dead.
You know, the Malcolm Butler thing. As I said, if there's one person in sports that I could inject truth serum into and just have an hour to talk to, it would be Bill Belichick. And the very first question is, tell me what the F happened with Malcolm Butler. That's it. And then, you know what I would do? Then I would use the rest of the serum for the crafts. And I'd be like,
oh,
no. And I would be like, what happened to the deflator?
Yeah.
Where are they now? They just like disappear. I can't believe we live where we live, where they lived. And nobody knows anything about what happened to Yastrzemski and what are the other guy's name was?
McNally.
Like, nobody knows. And the only person who's ever said that they've run into him was that comedian, Jim Brewer, who said he, you know, ran into the one of the dudes down at some place in the Bahamas, which is odd. But the story was so odd that I believed it. Very, very strange. But Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are back. The Bill Belichick story that came out yesterday is from a Seth Wickersham, of all people, book that's coming out about Sean Payton. And Sean Payton said that for a moment, right when Bill ended up leaving the Patriots, for a moment, there was discussion that Sean Payton was talking to the Broncos about possibly letting Bill Belichick be the head coach until he ended up getting his 15 wins, which would pass Don Shula for the all-time wins. And Sean Payton would step back as offensive coordinator and then very nicely step up. And of course, that was shot down. I don't know, like, who that's more embarrassing for. Because, like, again, I think if you're Bill Belichick and you knew they did that for you, then you got to feel like a tool. They're only letting me do this so I can win 15 games. You'd seem like a little bit of a tool.
No. If somebody legitimately wanted to do that for Bill and they had an offensive coordinator of Sean Payton's repute willing to agree to it, that's not embarrassing for Bill.
But then it's like Bill not getting hired for, like, his own reason. You know, like he wanted to get hired as a head coach so he could do everything he used to do here, get all of his own coordinators, get all of his guys in here, bring Matt Patricia in to screw up an offense. God, that's the worst. No, that is one of the worst all-time football moves I've ever seen. When he did that last season, it was fireable.
That, like, and drafting N'Keal Harry.
Well, they can't, you know, what can you do? They can't all be zingers. But in this case, Tom Brady is now talking. And Tom Brady's talking about...
Well, Brady's never stopped talking. But in this case, this one actually I thought was interesting. Maybe less so the Bill comments, because maybe that's more of what we heard. God, I don't want to interrupt your flow. You're going to talk about the niceties.
No. Let's go ahead and just play the Tom Brady. Do you have the Tom Brady clip there?
So this is him talking right about the Super Bowl.
He
was asked what his favorite Super Bowl was, and I never would have guessed this if I had to. This would be third or fourth, I would guess, of the six he won here.
Let's take a listen.
I think one that was like the 2014 one against the Seahawks, you'd probably say like the Atlanta one where we came back from all those, you know, down a bunch of points. But the one, I won three really early. Yeah. And it was kind of like, you know, what's so hard about the NFL? You know, and that's kind of like a little dick. I mean, no idea.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like I went to Michigan. We were good in Michigan. Oh, yeah. And I won two bowl games. And then I got to the pros. My first year, we won the Super Bowl. And then, you know, my next year, we didn't. And then we won two back-to-back. So I was kind of like, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to start the season, work hard, you know, and then win. That's okay, big deal.
Nice.
But then we lost in 07 to the Giants. Then we lost in 2011 to the Giants. And then we played Seattle in the 2014. So we'd gone 10 years, and I had 3 years, three times we won it. Then I had two where we lost it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, man. And then 2014 came, and we're going against the Legion of Boom, and we're down, I think, 10 in the fourth quarter. Or 10 in the fourth quarter. Right. And then we end up having just the most incredible, you know, last 20 minutes of the game. Oh, and yeah. Defense played incredible. I mean, that stop down at the goal line, it went from like, you know, again, we were losing most of the game. We finally got a lead in the fourth quarter. They drove right down the field. And then Dante Hightower made one of the greatest plays in Super Bowl history, tackling Marshawn, getting blocked, had like one shoulder out, somehow got Marshawn on the ground, which like 10 guys can't get Marshawn on the ground.
Exactly.
Dante did it with like one shoulder.
Yeah.
And then Malcolm makes one of the greatest defensive plays in the history of football. And everyone after the game talked about, you know, oh, not handing the ball to Marshawn. I was like, how about that play by Malcolm
Let's
Butler
celebrate
to like
this
pull
play.
The trigger?
Yeah.
Yeah, to pull the trigger Crazy. On that yeah. as a rookie yeah. to like go over the top of the pick in the acceleration burst. And then
get there,
it was
like,
all
you know,
or nothing. Yeah.
It was crazy.
You know, that's my favorite Super Bowl.
Really?
You know,
your favorite?
It's my favorite because A, it was the best ending. It was a great game. It was against a very worthy villain. And
speaking of Deflategate, it was at the center of that whole controversy.
Yes.
So it was definitely redemption. I get it.
Right. That was the unequivocally the sweetest. But there was the one thing about the Atlanta one was that the Atlanta one was so stressful that you almost couldn't enjoy it. Matter of fact, it was not until about a week afterwards that it really hit me that they had done it. Because all of the things that, like, just the Edelman catch, you had to sit there and wait to see if it was a real catch. And then even, like, the final James White touchdown, you had to sit there and wait. And there's that video of Bill Belichick walking out the field, and Tom Brady didn't even realize they won. Bill's like, hey, we won. Like, I mean, even he was kind of in shock that everything had gone the way that it did. I honestly did not enjoy the end of that Super Bowl where they beat Atlanta because it was so stressful.
People wear 28-3 shirts and have license plates. They don't have Malcolm Butler, you know, Marshawn Lynch. You just don't hear that as nearly as much. And 2001, I mean, come on. That is, talk about legendary.
It's legendary, but it was one on a field goal. You know, to me, the Malcolm Butler interception is the greatest play in Super Bowl history.
What a field goal with Brady leading a drive in 2 minutes when John Madden was saying kneel on the football and take it to overtime.
It's,
I mean,
it's cool. It was great.
The greatest show on turf. I mean, I'm just stunned to hear Brady say that. I'm actually surprised to hear you say that as well. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if there are any other Patriots fans who feel that way, that the 2014 title is their favorite.
I guarantee you, if we were to take five calls right now and they were to pick like whether it was 2014 or one of the other ones, like people would agree with me. I think that 2014, because it included the greatest play in Super Bowl history, and because it was truly like an epic back and forth, it was just an awesome game, the entire thing. And like that last quarter was like edge of your seat, back and forth, and it was a likable team. I just think that was right there the best, the most satisfying of all of the different, of all the Super Bowls. Atlanta, as I said, I didn't enjoy it until a week later. Because I couldn't believe it. Even the next morning on the air, I'm like, how the hell did that happen?
Well, by the way, I want to give Brady credit there, too, because I'm always critical of him and things he says. But for him to gush that much about members of the defense, not just Malcolm Butler, but Hightower and everything else, like that's pretty cool to hear him speak about the team in that way. That's as good as of an answer as I've heard Brady give in a long time.
Well, the Malcolm Butler thing's great because I know that he was like watching tape and he did a lot of studying on and he saw that exact play. So he almost knew like exactly what they were going to do. And he just, I mean, it's the greatest play in NFL history. And not only NFL history, Super Bowl history, that Malcolm Butler interception is truly the best play in NFL history.
But it's more framed as the biggest gaffe in football history, like in the decision to
sure. So, yeah, that was, it was very, very dumb, but it doesn't take away how great that play was. Yeah, yeah.
Edelman's catch is equally as good, as impressive. I mean,
2014's I think that the majority of people will agree with me.
No,
is that out of all the?
If you did a poll right now of which is your favorite Super Bowl?
Yes,
2001.
I'm talking Patriots wins.
Yes.
Yeah, 2014.
It'll be a distant third.
There's not even no.
Stiz, put the poll up.
I'm telling you, 2014 will be like I'm right on this. Patriots fans will think it's 2014. In the majority. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to be very sentimental about the first one. I understand that. But I think that most people would say 2014 was the one that felt the best. That was the coolest. That was the best one.
Yeah, you're wrong. But that's fine. I appreciate the take. That is a
I don't even think it's a hot
stance.
Take. As a matter of fact, I think it's a lukewarm to cold take. I honestly believe that most people think the way that I do on this.
Okay, well, Bradford will set you straight next. And I guess you got Tom Brady on your side.
Look at the big market tease pivot there. Went straight to Bradford. I think Bradford's on my side in this. I'm just making a prediction. He's going to say 2014. Yep. All right. 617-779-7937. We are not going anywhere. Rob Bradford in studio. And finally, he will, of course, agree with me. 2014, the best Super Bowl. That is the great Will Fleming. And it is Rich Ken and Ted Johnson. What's great is that we played that earlier, and I was like, I love when Will gets into it because it was such a, as I said, it was water in a desert for a while, and now that they're doing well, I love hearing him do that. And Ken, you got a text?
Oh yes. Will says, I am more than happy to have a Willgasm.
I would love to hear Willgasms for the rest of the season. Oh, so that would be nice.
Things you didn't think you'd say 10 years ago.
That's right. Rob Bradford is here in studio, and he is brought to you by, I do not have the sponsor.
McFarland Energy. All right.
Real quick, before we get to the Red Sox, can we go to Rob and Swampscott real quick? Let's go to
I thought you wanted Rob to weigh in on the Brady thing.
He is, but this is the same thing. All right, so we were just talking about the best Super Bowl. Like, which one do most people think was the best Patriots Super Bowl? I agree with Tom Brady. I think it's 2014. I think that the Malcolm Butler interception, it's the greatest play in Super Bowl history, greatest play in NFL history, and I think that the Atlanta Falcons one was just too stressful. Like, it was like at the end of it, you couldn't believe they had done it, and it's great looking back, but during the time, it was the perfect ending to the Super Bowl in 2014. Let's go to Rob on line two, if you don't mind, Stiz. Rob, what's up, man?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, Ken, I love you, dude, but on this one, you are all wet. 2014, every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, sentimentally, yeah, I can see the first one. I can see the people that say the Atlanta game because of the massive comeback. But that interception at the goal line at that point in the game when everyone thought I was at a family party, just kids and parents. When that happened, the place went nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You would have thought you were at a bar.
Yep,
it was insane.
It was a huge moment, and you couldn't have that moment. Like, the Falcons one was just so freaking stressful. Like, 18 things had to happen for it to get there. Now, is it unbelievable? Absolutely. But it just took me a while to hit me. But that ending, it's the perfect ending to a Super Bowl.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Biggest parade was 2001. So by the numbers, the region was most passionate about the 2001 title.
Because it was new. And as I said, that is a...
Put whatever qualifier you want on it.
That's the only one that I would say, all right, I understand why people would think that one was the best. But if you're going to put it against the Falcons one, no, there's not even a question. Rob Bradford, which one do you believe is the best?
Okay, so first of all, Ken stopped short of saying what I would say because he knows I've trademarked it and it would cost him $5, which is, I like you personally, Rich. I respect your opinion, but it is your prerogative to be wrong.
Okay.
There is no question about this to me. It is the first one they won.
Thank you.
And I would say this, and I've said this, it is the most important or most dynamic, most impactful championship in the history of Boston, I think. Even more so, and people will push back on this, even more so than the 2004 Red Sox, because it came out of nowhere. Like, there wasn't, in the 2004 Red Sox, it was, you had the buildup, you knew they were going to win, you knew they were going to beat the Cardinals. It was what it was at that point. But this one came out of nowhere. You hadn't won a championship in, what was that? It was 1986.
Sure.
And it did something to this region. That championship did something to this region. This to stay on the Patriots. There's never been an impact of what that did compared to these other ones. Not even close. Because by the time you get to the Seattle one or the Atlanta one, mm-hmm. you had won championships. You knew what it felt like. You felt like you did not have that feeling at all. And when that next day in this area, I have never seen more smiles on faces other than the people coming from Scotland a few weeks ago. I've never seen the area happier than after that win. So I would just say that.
Well, I guess Tom Brady was wrong then.
Yeah, well, he's wrong about a lot of things, including including his hairline.
Dare you? How dare you? He's gotten very good work done. And I'm sure if someone wants to sponsor my hair, I would do the exact same thing. By the way, Rob Bradford brought to you by McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil delivery, as well as expert HVAC services at McFarlandEnergy.com. Team's pretty good right now.
Oh, my goodness. I was boots in the ground in Chicago. Everyone's happy.
Yep.
And they believe in themselves.
Are immaculate.
Yeah, vibes are. They took the vibes away from the most vibe team in the Major League Baseball. Everyone in Chicago, they hadn't lost a home series in 10 series.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy that team with BC High's Mike Vassell waving the magic wand and the wizard hat. And I mean, there was. If you're power ranking the teams with the highest vibes this year, the White Sox are head and shoulders number one. But the Red Sox went in there, and after that game yesterday, it was just a different feel than it has been. Yeah. And it's for sort of like, okay, we believe that things have turned. You won 9 out of 11 now, and yeah, we dug ourselves a hole, but we believe that we can actually win more than 3 games in a row because they've done it now 2 different times.
Can I ask you, because you're in with the team and you obviously talk to these guys every day, what is the environment like after that fight, like the Contreras situation? Because it almost seems like, well, since then, Contreras has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Is there a feeling of almost like it's us versus them now?
No, because they lost 2 in a row.
I know they did, but also it just seems like they've got a little bit of a fire in their
yeah,
under their ass.
I think it more comes with the fact that you are hitting. I mean, you have now, for the first time all year, had 3 straight games of hitting multiple home runs. Ooh. Which is kind of crazy.
Wow.
So this is a thing. It wasn't rocket science with this team. We knew what the problem was. They had great pitching and they couldn't hit. They couldn't hit consistently. They couldn't hit home runs, and now they're doing it. So I think that, Rich, like, that has happened in the past. There's no question about things like that have happened.
Yeah.
But I come back to it. I mean, we sat there 2 days after. I said, well, you know what? We know the cliff came when he threw the helmet. That was where everything took a turn for the worse. But they've rebounded. And as I said, you've now gone into other places. You took care of business in Anaheim. You're hitting the ball. You took care of business last night. And I don't know if it's going to keep going, but I do know this. Being around that team feels different right now than it has ever had, because I think that they actually believe in themselves more than they did.
Even I was telling Rich on your Sunday show, the Baseball's a Boring Show, 10 a.m. Sundays here on WEI.
Thank you.
A lot of callers supporting Breslow.
Yeah,
even.
That was wild.
So, weird. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we basically said to everybody, grade Breslow. Grade Breslow for this year. And the grades, I think we had about 13 of them, and they went from everywhere, B+, B. There was a few C's, but mostly it was like B's and D's.
Do they have to justify their rating? Because B+, dude, look at the record of this team.
No, well, so this is the thing, Rich, is that I thought it was a really, really fascinating thing, because if you go by his player acquisition,
mm-hmm.
he was on a heater. This is 2 straight off seasons where you go down the list. You go down Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, Caleb Durbin now has started to play well. Who else am I thinking of? He had a good offseason, just like he had a really good offseason the year before. The difference is, every time you say that, and those people were going to give him a B or B+ for everything that he did,
mm-hmm.
the people who are giving Ds do exactly what you did, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
It's a results business.
Yep.
Like, you're still 7 games under .500. You still, A, didn't get the thing that you knew would make you better, which is the power bat that you knew what you were going to get,
yep.
that was going to actually supply runs, and B, there is no proof that what you did in late April was actually the right thing to do. I would still suggest, it's crazy to think that firing half your coaching staff, forget about the manager,
yeah.
firing half your coaching staff is a recipe for turning things around over a 2-month span.
All right, stick around if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Stick around for another break, because
I got all the time in the world until I don't have all the time in the world. I got a flight to Scotland at 7:30.
Promise me when you get back, I need to fight, because now I want to go to Scotland. Like, I've been suckered into it. Like, after seeing what they did when they came here, and by the way, good on the country of Scotland in immediately advertising in Boston for traveling to Scotland. It's all over. There's billboards. There's on the side of buses. We came to you. Now come to Scotland. And I'm just like, yep, I'm in.
There is only one person in the baseball community that actually is paying it forward. That actually is as the army of one. The army of one.
Army of one.
Will march down the streets of Edinburgh starting tomorrow.
With a kilt on and balls a-flopping. All right, we will be right back. Oh, yes. 93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurtleib, Ken Laird. Ted's going to be back with us on Monday. And we have in studio gentlemen who will be wearing plaid even on the plane as he heads to go see our good buddies from Scotland. You know what? I should, I don't know what you're doing out there, but I should reach out to our good friend, Kat, who's out here.
Yeah, well, she's Glasgow, in Glasgow. Though. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're not, were you in Edinburgh?
Edinburgh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know what? It's all, I can go anywhere. Up to Skyfall, like James Bond, wherever you want me to go. Loch Ness. Well, I am spreading the baseballs and boring word throughout the countryside of Scotland. I am so excited. This is basically me jacking myself up. It's like me when I start a podcast. There's nobody I'd rather talk to than so-and-so. There's nothing I'd rather do than get on another plane after flying back from Chicago for another 6 hours.
Well, Rob, there's nobody I'd rather be talking to than you right now here in studio. Rob Bradford, of course, from Baseball is Boring, WEI.com. We got to talk real quick. And by the way, Chad Tracy's going to join us in about a little less than 30 minutes, maybe like 20, 25 minutes. What's up with Contreras and his suspension? Do we have any idea? Why is this taking so long?
I mean, my guess is that they didn't want to do it the same day they announced he was making the All-Star team. So I would think that he would be suspended, be knocked down like it was for Cavalli. I don't think that it's going to be eliminated by any stretch of the imagination. But when they do, it's going to be interesting because he has been playing so well. He is so important. That's one thing that I think that everyone should brace themselves for.
Yeah.
Like a lineup, a Contreras-less lineup. That's a very, very different looking lineup. So, hey, good for him for making the All-Star team. I do think he's going to be in the Home Run Derby.
Is that a good thing? Can I ask you that?
I love some good, like, does it screw up your swing time?
Yeah, because didn't it legit screw up people's swings several years in a row?
The last time they had players with Ortiz and Adrian Gonzalez, right? So, and the Adrian Gonzalez was terrible after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And Adrian was very opinionated. And he said, you know, hey, listen, it did not screw up my swing. This is not the reason. I am fine. And the hitting coach, Dave Magadan, was like, no, it absolutely screwed up the swing.
Right.
Yeah.
Bobby Abreu, remember the one year he fell off completely?
Oh, yeah.
He was having a monster first
half. But I was talking to the White Sox hitting coach about this yesterday. But by the way, it's so sad that Murakami isn't in it, but oh well. But I said to him, like, well, is it that big a deal? Because all these guys do this more, swing this way more than ever before anyway. You know, it's the driveline thing.
Thou
shalt not be set lame.
Yes.
Driveline. But it's the driveline thing where you're already getting up there and trying to jack pull side home run. So, yeah, it might screw up somebody, but I think last year's was really, really good. Gene Caminero taking out people in left field. All of it. I love it. I actually liked what they did last year. They've done some stupid things in the All-Star game, some really stupid things. One of the stupidest things in the history of Major League Baseball was saying that the winner of the game, that they would get home field advantage. That was the dumbest.
I love that. I love that.
That was, like, again, your prerogative to be absolutely wrong.
It gave it meaning.
Give it meeting.
Yes.
Ken, these games were spring training games. What you would do, you would go down in the fifth inning to say, okay, Manny Ramirez is available, fifth inning, and you would see waves of these guys hitting their private jets in the fifth inning. So this game, which is a spring training game, the equivalent of them going golfing on March 17th, means who is going to get home field advantage?
All part of the strategy. If you're a manager, you got to pick the right guys.
Oh, really?
You leave early. Oh,
yeah, make it mean something. Right. The last place loses a finger.
That's better. I like that idea better.
It's like the NBA Cup. I mean, it just gives a spark.
Let's you know what?
You're a huge NBA Cup guy.
I love the NBA
Who doesn't love the NBA Cup? Let's go to Joe on line one. He's got a question for Brad Foe. What's up, Joe? How's it going?
Hey, guys. What's up? Hey, Brad Foe.
What up?
You mentioned a little bit about it with the driveline. Is there any coincidence that they fired their driveline guy about 2.5-3 weeks ago, and they've been hitting the ball?
That guy had nothing to do with anything.
Really?
Kyle Bodie?
He was their hitting science coordinator,
he was, but as everyone has pointed out since, in the last year, 2 years, he really hasn't been part of anything. He brought in a lot of technology. And Joe, I'm not saying, oh, well, look at, they fired this guy. They went away from Driveline because they still have Driveline guys up and down the organization, including one of the main guys is Soteropoulos, John Soteropoulos.
But you got to admit, the timing is suspicious. Well, that story comes out, and you're right.
And Lorenzo came in.
Yeah, Lorenzo. Lorenzo. Well, you cannot, as much as Lorenzo and I have butted heads over their social media strategy, you cannot discount what has happened to Caleb Darby.
Yes.
And he is absolutely the guy when you point to, well, did they have a shift in philosophy in terms of some guys anyway? And there's no question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were trying, whether it was him, whether it's them, whatever it was, the version of him to begin the year was pull side, be Alex Bregman, and that wasn't him.
Let me ask you, because we're about to have him on in a few.
Yeah.
How do you, because we were just talking about the records that Chad Tracy has had and what Alex Cora had at the beginning.
And Jones is all over this because he hates Cora. I don't know, hates Cora is a stretch, but he blames Cora, and he loves that Tracy's now 500.
Tracy's 500.
Coming off of Colorado, he had jumped that ship a little bit, hadn't he?
Well, he's back.
Well, yeah. I would say this. Do you think that that Clayton McCullough of the Miami Marlins, they get off to a terrible start and now they took off? I mean, how do you prove that Alex Cora wouldn't have done this, have gone 500 the rest of the way?
Sure. Well, then just from your inside knowledge and how you've seen Chad Tracy work, like how well do you think
he's
doing?
I think he's done an awesome job.
Okay.
No, and I listen, I still think there's every, when Alex Cora becomes, you know, they looking for managers, he's going to be at the top of everybody's list because he's a really good manager. But Chad Tracy has proven himself to be a really, really good manager. And I think one of the most important things is how he's been able to handle the potential chaos. You mentioned this before.
Yeah.
But just everything, like whether it's actually being really opinionated and honest in certain times where he has to back up his players, or whether it's diffusing stuff, whatever, he's handled it really, really well.
Big, I think, clash with Rich last week when he was digging in on, he wouldn't get an inch.
But that was textbook. And again, okay, good job by asking the questions, but that was textbook. I'm going to answer, and then I don't need to answer.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he was sticking up for his guys, which I have no problem. I actually had no problem with his answer at all, but it's a question that needed to be asked.
Yeah. Well, again, that some guys might say, oh, like, the Bobby Valentine, I'm going to punch you in the nose, you know, but he's like, I'm answering. I see what you're saying. And then I'm just like, okay, it's the Patriot thing. They don't need to answer. Like, they're drilled in. They don't need to answer. But I think that Chad Tracy answers the questions as he does with you guys. Excellent interview. Dad Foe's favorite interview of all time.
Excellent.
But he does it very well where you feel like you're getting something. You feel like he's not hiding something. So anyway, I would just say he's doing a really, really good job. But to say, oh, well, you know, Cora and that group couldn't. I do know this, that firing the coaches, I think, was stupid. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because you fired, you can fire the manager, whatever, that's fine. But to think that this is a good idea, that you have to turn over the coaching staff with a bunch of guys who are swimming upstream, and you're taking away a lot of the guys who they not only were given contract extensions, but were actually the part of the foundation in spring training in early April, that still makes no sense.
There was a rumor that Alex Cora could be coming back to the organization.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think like about that rumor?
I like spiciness. I don't think it's happening.
You know,
I think it's the better thing is to figure out if whether or not Don Mattingly is going to leave Philadelphia, because if he doesn't, Alex Cora will be there in a second.
Let me ask you about something else you said is not happening, and that's Jeremy Payne. You watch, and a bigger picture thing, because I am not appreciated in my time. I'm like some of the great artists, like Van Gogh and you know, Nikola Tesla. What will it take for the Red Sox to be buyers again? Maybe not Peña.
And Dante Hightower.
But yes. But even for like a couple pieces or a mid-level piece, what will it take to prove to the organization we need to go add a piece? Well, like they have to get in a wild card position. They need
They have to keep playing like they have, because if the team that you see, and people don't want to hear this, but this team that you see right now can beat any team in the American League. Now, that's the team that you see right
now.
That
sounds like an absurd thing to say, but you're right.
Name a team that you can't beat.
Well, I mean,
Tampa, I guess, is probably the right
okay.
Now.
Well,
you went up against
okay,
them. Got embarrassed.
If you figure out how to pitch to Yandy Diaz with runners on base, then you're good. And yeah, like Tampa. I think if you look at the teams right now, Tampa is the best team.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying that the Red Sox, we've all know that they had playoff-level pitching. We all know that they needed more hitting. Now they're getting more hitting. The team that you see right now can, if they keep playing this well, this way, and you keep cutting into that lead, and all of a sudden you land at, whatever, two back, then, yeah, sure. But I still say, you better be sure, man. You better be, I'm putting it to you, Ken.
I hear it.
You better be sure, because Sonny Gray is going to be, along with Tarik Skubal, the most coveted pitcher at the trade deadline, and you do not want to miss that window if you can get a future all-star position player.
Real quick on him, though. He has a no-trade clause and a weird, like, option year next year.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to pay, unless they're going to pay down on the contract, the team would have to pay $16 million this year. And then a lot more money next year.
You can eat that trash haggis when you're out there in Scotland, by the way.
You gotta try it. I mean, come on.
It's trash.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, listen, you don't go to Scotland for the food. You go for the vibes, right?
The whiskey.
So you go for the whiskey.
There's a song. It's called, I forget. It's a song about Scotland that the darkness made, and it was like the best line is, "The women are gorgeous. The food is okay."
I want to know. I want to workshop a little bit. What should I do? Because I am, again, the army of one.
Yes.
You know. What is it? Like, no party?
Whatever. Oh, no, Scotland, no party.
No baseball's a boring, no party.
It sounds it's easy enough, just from what I imagine, as just going to find where the bars are and just drinking with them. And then
I want to make sure that they have not forgotten. Number one, I want to make sure that they understand that we have not forgotten them.
We're Red Sox crap. We're Boston stuff.
Well,
put a cone on somebody's head.
Well, baseball's a boring cone.
That's cultural. Right. What is that called? Cultural appropriation. We don't like that.
Whatever. If anybody who has any ideas, I'm happy because I want to respect the moment. And along with my daughter's graduation from University of Edinburgh, by the way.
Congratulations
to Taylor Bradford. It just happens to be graduated. Everything works out.
All right. Well, have an awesome trip.
Yeah.
We need updates because I truly, after this whole World Cup shenanigans, I want to go now.
Yeah.
Like, now I want to go. Like, Scotland was just like radar.
When my daughter's going there, I went there. It's awesome.
Yeah.
William Wallace Monument, man. You're fired up.
It's the juice. Yeah, going.
It's like playing Ace of Spades. Like, yeah.
Awesome. Well, have yourself an amazing time, and appreciate you coming in as always, Robert. Have a safe flight, and we're gonna have Chad Tracy on here in just about 15 minutes. Oh yes, the shredding. I can see Ken right now. He's already got his Stratocaster in his hand. He's doing the air guitar. It's a new Muse album. It's excellent.
You can't shred on a Strat though.
Sure you can. Tell that to Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Well, he was a shredder. He was a blues man.
Blues man shredder.
Not really.
You watch that Austin City Limits thing where he was coked out of his mind and tell me he wasn't shredding.
Oh, I love Stevie Ray Vaughan.
And that was one of the greatest musical performances I've seen anyone, and that guy was on so much coke that but it's amazing to watch.
They recorded a full live show of Stevie Ray Vaughan at the El Macumbo in Toronto. You got to watch. If you're an SRV fan, watch that.
I do start to finish,
it's like an hour of just pure energy. It's like Bradfo.
Yeah, of course, without a question.
By the way, how about this Wilson Contreras news? You spoke this into existence.
Yeah?
Wilson Contreras in for the Home Run Derby. First Red Sox since 2011 to participate. This is the fear of the curse of the Derby.
It's curse.
And I know you're going to ask Tracy about this.
I am. 10 minutes. Because it's not something that's just made up. Like, I mean, there are players who have been injured after being in the Home Run Derby. And there's been people who work with teams who say that they recommend against players doing it for that very reason. So I'm not saying it happens all the time, but there are people who are legitimate, like doctors and people who work with the teams and even players who said I shouldn't have done the Home Run Derby.
Well, he's suspended, so he's got a built-in vacation already.
Sure.
He'll be ready to go.
Then I guess he'll be good when he gets back. It is Rich, Ken, and Ted. Ted will be back on Monday. And by the way, Chad Tracy will join us in about 2 minutes. I quickly want to get to something, though, because we were just talking about, let's wrap this up. We played a clip of Tom Brady, and Tom Brady was talking about what his favorite Super Bowl was. And Tom Brady said that his favorite was 2014. That was, of course, the Malcolm Butler one. That was after Deflategate. And when the clip was over, Ken was flabbergasted that I 100% agree with him. 2014 to me was a perfect game. It had the best play in Super Bowl history, which means it's the best play in NFL history when Malcolm Butler ended up intercepting and winning the game. And I think that 28-3 is an unbelievable game, but it was so stressful at the end and so many things had to happen that you couldn't enjoy it. until about a week later, it really hit me that they had won it. And now, sentimental reasons, some people may see the first one. But when we mentioned that, you know, we got a bunch of texts that started coming in because Ken was like, there's no way people agree with you. And I said, I guarantee you it's the most cold, like not even lukewarm. It's a cold take that 2014 was the best Patriots Super Bowl. I say, I mean, even Tom Brady agrees with me and a bunch of texters. 2014, another one. 2004. Then they said that, yeah, someone said 2004. Rich is so right. And then they said best Super Bowl is the Falcons versus Patriots with the catch by Jules. Atlanta's the best. 2014, absolutely. Shut up, Rich. You know it all. Put up a poll. 28-3 and Edelman all day.
Well, put up a poll.
Where apparently you hate Brady. And then 2014 was the best. Blah, blah, blah. Rich, would you say that 2014 was...
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
The best part is that they sold a T-shirt at Patriot Place, it said, unequivocally the sweetest. And my good friend, Michael Hurley, bought it for me, and it's the greatest thing that I own.
Yeah, but he said that before the 28-3 comeback, so that's historically dated. You know, you can't go by that.
Listen, it was unequivocally. You ever had a nice hot dog slice? You like it, right?
Do you ever not like it? Have a nice hot grilled hot dog slice? You like it, right?
When was that from?
I'm sure it was that one. Does it ever get old for you? You're like, the hot dog slice. You're right. Real quick, you put up a poll. What did the poll say?
So it's phrased this way. Tom Brady told New Heights Show, the podcast, that his favorite Patriots Super Bowl is the 2014 season win over Seattle. Do you agree? Which is your favorite? Choices are 2001 over the Rams, 2014 over Seattle, or 2016 over Atlanta. Very tight. 124 votes in, 38% agrees with Rich. 2014 over Seattle, 33%. The Atlanta comeback right now, last place is 2001.
So I got it right?
Currently,
oh,
you're correct.
Oh, feel it, baby!
You got 23 hours and 29 minutes left to vote. So wait till this hits the reasonable people.
Listen, me and Tom Brady, we're on the same page on so many things. All right, by the way, we are in the Ketchelsaw Injury Attorney Studios. No fee unless you win. Chad Tracy joins us next. We're not going anywhere. Back in 2 minutes with the manager of your Boston Red Sox.
This is Rich and Ken with Ted Johnson on WEEI.
And it is 93.7 WEEI, and what a ride this Red Sox team has been on over the last couple of weeks. I mean, you want to talk about how cool a story it would be if they just continue on this streak. It's amazing how many teams were ahead of them in the wild card, or at least, you know, to get into the wild card, and now only three teams, I believe, ahead, and they're no longer in last place in the division. But... this American League is so screwed up and so strange that who knows what will happen. But I do know that Chad Tracy has been doing a pretty damn good job. And right now, the team under his reign has hit 500. And Chad Tracy, who we love having on, he is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Hey, Chad, thanks for joining us, man. It's been a... as I was saying, a hell of a ride the last couple of weeks.
What's up, guys? How we doing?
What's up, Chad? So what is the difference? I know that's a very generic question to start with, but I mean, we're seeing hitting now. We're seeing wins. We're seeing wins against good teams. Like, I mean, the Sox obviously have been, you know, one of the hottest teams in baseball, the White Sox. And, you know, then there was the Yankee series. Have you noticed, is there anything noticeable that you believe has changed that has kind of put this team on a different trajectory over the last couple of weeks?
I think in big picture terms, probably we're doing some things now consistently that we weren't before. And, you know, such as, you know, the offensive part, it's not just the run scoring, but it's the, you know, some of the swing decisions and, you know, not swinging at everything and taking our walks when they come. Scoring early against opposing starters has been a big thing and something we weren't doing before. So when you start to pile up some games where you're doing some things that you weren't before, it makes you feel as a group. It gives you some confidence knowing like, okay, this is something we weren't doing before. We've now done it for a stretch of games in a row, and we see the results it's giving us. So I just think that there was a lot of different things you know, that were going on offensively that we kept attacking. And we're seeing the fruits of the labor now. So that being said, we have to maintain it.
Chad, it's been a wild ride for Wilson Contreras over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, there was the skirmish and the suspension that was given out. And then he found out he's going to be in the All-Star game. And now we're finding out he's going to be in the Home Run Derby. which I think was just announced. Let me just start with his status as far as the suspension is concerned. What's the latest on that? What have you heard about his suspension and where that stands?
Haven't heard anything, to be honest with you. I know they're working through that. I know there's been results on a couple of the players that were involved on their end. I think, you know, you don't hear a lot on that stuff until it actually comes. Obviously, we're preparing ourselves for if and when that happens. But, you know, usually you don't get much word on that until they've reached a final verdict. So don't know what it's going to be. We're definitely preparing for potentially having to be without Wilson, but we're still waiting.
Happens on the field because, you know, obviously there's some things that you don't want your players to do. But at the same time, you also you understand just how valuable Wilson Contreras is to this team. What kind of discussions did you have afterwards as far as that situation was concerned?
Not a lot. To be honest with you, after that happened, I left the game with him. I was ejected, and I just sat with him, you know. I mean, for about the last inning and a half, watched the game on TV and just sat with him, and understanding of, you know, outside of just the circumstances of baseball, all the other things that were going on in his life in that moment with the stuff going on in Venezuela. And, you know, like having Wilson on the field for our team is very important. But in that particular moment, trying to see things through a lens of like everything else that's going on, in addition to what just happened. So just sat with him and just made sure he knew that we were there to support him, and we'll get through it one way or another. But, you know, haven't had many other conversations around it. He's been absolutely amazing on this road trip, not just what he's done on the field, but the leadership he's taken and how engaged he's been on the bench and helping guys. And he's just been incredible. So keep riding that wave as long as we can. And then as a group, figure it out if we have to play some games without him.
How do you feel about him being selected for the Home Run Derby, and any trepidation at the Derby curse at the end of it?
No, I think it's cool. I think it's good for him. First of all, you know, we had to wait for him to get into the All-Star game. I'm very, very happy about that. I felt like that was, when you look at the numbers, not only what he's meant to our team, but you just look at the numbers in the league, and regardless of position, he's got some of the best offensive numbers in the American League, and you just felt like this has got to happen eventually. So I'm pumped about that. And then obviously the Derby, you know, it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing for baseball. It's one of the most watched events. And if, you know, he's wanting to do that and gets to be on that big stage, that's amazing, an amazing opportunity. So, and I think they're changing the format this year, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't looked all the way into it. This is me as my own opinion, not a fan of that other format where it's just take as many swings as possible in a 2-minute period. I think it's exhausting. So I think it, if they're going back to the old format, it allows you to really enjoy watching each individual home run and a little bit less taxing on the player. But so I'm a more of a fan of that format. But broadly, I think if he wants to do it, I think it's great for the game.
And what are the chances that Sonny Gray might get a nod? Have you heard anything about that still being a possibility?
I haven't heard it. It's another one you don't hear a lot on. I sure hope that to answer your question, I sure hope that the odds are good. You're talking about a 10-1 pitcher with a 2-point whatever ERA, one of the best, one of the best pitchers in the American League, you know, so I'm hopeful, remaining hopeful over the next, you know, couple of days, handful of days that, with all the things that happen in the league with whether it's injuries or players that pitch on Saturday or Sunday that can't participate and drop out or whatever it is, hopeful that he ends up where he belongs as well.
So, Chad, this has obviously been a season where there's been there's been some highs, like the Yankees series, and obviously this last win last night was a great one. And there's obviously been some lows too, and I know that Bill Belichick famously used to use bulletin board material. There was the famous story about how, you know, when they were about to play in the Super Bowl, he found the Super Bowl a parade for the Eagles and like read the parade route in front of the team before they actually played and got them motivated. Ted Johnson's talked about that a lot. Do you guys, I mean, with all the stuff that's been said in the media, you know, when things were going bad, do you ever use any of that? Is there any kind of bulletin board, us against them material that you introduced to the guys to get them motivated?
I don't think so. No. I mean, I think the closest we've come is I know that Flo and some of the group and Tyler, you know, one of our guys that works in our video, believe it or not, we put together a video with some of the guys and showed them what Fenway is like when the team is playing well, like at the end of last year. more so because of, you know, over a month ago when we were playing so poorly at home and there's a lot of boos raining down and different things. Wanted some of the guys that hadn't been here to get a glimpse of, like, hey, if we can turn this thing around, this is what it looks like at this place when the team embraces you, you know, and you start playing the game the way you should. So no, I don't think it was any us against anybody. It was just like, this is what it'll turn into. But as much as they get frustrated, like, they'll back you when the team plays well. So we did some of that. But outside of that, no, I mean, you bring up Belichick. My favorite Belichick moment ever was, I think it was Cincinnati, right? On to Cincinnati.
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah, of course.
That one, for me, if you're going to give me a mantra, like I just kept saying to the guys, and I think I've said it in the media a lot, is we're worried about today, right? Yeah. Like they keep mentioning, oh, if we do this over the next 2 weeks, I'm like, we're worried about today. Like when you're in our position, the position we were in, and the position we're still in, you don't have the luxury of thinking about, okay, if we get to September, no, it's just, we have to, like today, we have to go out today and our job is to go out and play a good baseball game and try to beat the White Sox today. And then we'll take care of tomorrow and the next day. And that's been kind of what we've been focusing on here lately. And we have to continue to do that.
That's a great story. Who was it who made that video of the Red Sox winning and showed it to
them? I think it was Flo had brought it to Tyler. Tyler Forgione's works in our video. He's in there with Brindley and, you know, all the time. So, brought it to him. He does really good work, and it was like a quick 2-minute video. And I think some of the veteran guys that had been here through that last year spoke in it. And more to answer your question, no, it's not us against anybody. It's more like let's give these people some baseball that they can be proud of, you know. And we've done that here for a couple weeks, but everybody in here knows too, like a day at a time, and we still have 70 some odd games to go, and we have to continue to do this for a period of time.
That's cool, because we had talked about that. There were guys in the team who had never known what it feels like, you know, to do that, and Fenway's a great place, and now they've got a taste of it, and you know, it's like, I'm sure it's addictive.
That was a couple weeks ago, and to your point, like the you know, I think everybody to a man, like, that hadn't been here, they got a taste of it in the New York series, because that was as electric as Fenway has been all year. It was incredible, the environment that the fans put forth during that series. And obviously we won all four games, but for the guys that haven't been here to get to experience that and had seen the video before, like, oh, that's true. That is what this feels like when you start to play good baseball here.
Chad, what are the chances Brian Bayo's back in the mix here if you need a spot start coming up?
We'll see. We're talking about a lot of different scenarios. Obviously getting down to the end of the All-Star break, or getting down to the end of the half, or getting close to the All-Star break. So there's a lot of things in play there. Obviously, Brian's down there working hard. That's an option. There's length relief options if we need to piece something together. So we have not decided yet on what we're going to do. Also, we have to see how Ranger feels tomorrow. If he goes and throws a side, how does he feel? Are we even going to need a starter or not? Like, there's just so many balls up in the air with that still that we'll make the best decision we can once we know what we're going to have to do.
And with Peyton Tolley yesterday, who had a terrific bounce back for you, he called it the recalibration. How do you decide when in a game like that is the right time to pull him? I think he was at 91 pitches. As the season gets on, will you let some of your starters go deeper?
You know, for me, first of all, like 6 innings and no runs is pretty deep, you know? And I think when you're dealing with a guy like Tolles, who's like, you're still mindful of, you know, young pitchers and workloads, right? So you're mindful of that, and you're mindful of, like, when we get 6 innings and we have a 4-0 lead, do I need to push this guy well north of 100 pitches, which we have done hardly at all the whole season? And are you at a number where you feel like, how much am I asking to do here? And, you know, if I have only about 8 to 10 pitches of breathing room, am I just asking to go out there and put 2 runners on base just to yank him out of the game? So you have to factor all of those things in when you're making a decision like that, and also factor in a player in his first full season and being mindful of the load on him too. So, you know, I think if we're being fair, like, I think, you know, at least in the time I've been here, have shown that, you know, I'm not afraid to push starters. You know, I think evidenced by the 13 or whatever in a row quality starts that we had, and a number of those went into the 7th inning, sometimes the 8th. But each situation's different, you know, and where you're at in the schedule, and when you see it, a 4-day break coming up, and, you know, and trying to maintain load throughout a full season, all that stuff comes into play when you're making decisions like that.
All right, Chad, you mentioned Ranger a second ago. Like, what once again, can you just clarify his status and how he's doing and what you guys are expecting of him in the next couple of days?
Yeah, he had a little adductor tightness, groin tightness. So obviously he was removed from the game. was able to go out and play catch yesterday. And really, today he's going to be very light with nothing, and then we'd have a scheduled normal day where he'd throw a little bit more intent and be off a mound tomorrow. Everything's on hold right now until he gets off the mound tomorrow, and we'll see after that, you know, that 72 hours of time where he healed. How is he feeling during a side? And then it gives us a little bit better information to make an informed decision on, is he going to be able to make this start or not? And we'll see how he feels tomorrow and go from there.
And anything back, Chad, from the Roman hand specialist that he was going to see today?
No, he's seeing one today. I have not heard back on that yet, but he is seeing the specialist today in Atlanta. And then just continuing the rehab process and the things he was doing here. He's doing that in Florida, was on his way down to Florida, and he got to Florida, went to the specialist down south there in Atlanta, and he'll continue his rehab, but have a better idea with images today if everything's progressing, you know, and are still looking good. So we'll have more answers on that after we hear.
All right. So, Chad, finally, I was having a discussion with my friend, and I didn't realize that my take on this would have been so controversial, but I was telling him that Major League is the best baseball movie of all time, and he came back at a movie that I absolutely despise, and I will not spoil it for you or taint your opinion, but in your mind, what is the greatest baseball movie that's ever been made?
So you said Major League, but which one, though? There's three of them.
Back to the Minors, the third one that didn't have
any. Terrible. That's one of the worst baseball movies I've ever seen. The other first couple are up there. I'll tell you one of the most realistic baseball movies I've seen that I love. It was actually on TV last night, For Love of the Game.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It's a combination, really good baseball movie / love story. But the baseball portrayal of actual baseball in that movie is as good as I've seen. I thought that was a really cool movie just because the way they were able to make it so realistic. But the Major Leagues are up there for me. Those are a must watch anytime they're on TV.
No question. I got to get your opinion on Field of Dreams.
I like Field of Dreams. Another Kevin Costner movie, yeah. Baseball guy. I like Field of Dreams a lot. I think it's a great movie.
You had to think about it. You had to think about it. You had to justify it being good because that movie is not good.
Like there is a large chunk of that movie that isn't really baseball. You know, like there are spots of it that are obviously based around baseball, right? But there's a lot of chunks of it that aren't. But I think the ending's cool, you know, playing catch with dad under the lights. I like the movie a lot. You know, I like the movie a lot. I think there's other ones I prefer over.
Who is it? John Mulaney does an amazing bit where he talks about that movie. And he's like, so then the one guy, like, literally has attempted murder, throwing the kid off the stands. The kid's injured. And then one of the players comes out in order to help him. But because of ghost baseball rules, he's not allowed to go back into the game because ghost baseball rules say that it's completely forbidden. Every time the music would drive up, like they're trying to put lemons in your eyes to get you to cry. I don't know. Yeah. That was the debate I had where he was trying to tell me Field of Dreams is better than Major League. And I'm just like, come on, man. Major League. I thought I knew you, my friend.
Major Leagues. The Major League movies are the combination of the baseball and how funny they are. Those are hard to beat.
No question. As long as you don't complain that Wesley Snipes out of nowhere was replaced with Omar Epps. In the second one.
Yeah.
Don't look. No one will notice. All right. Well,
no.
Well, Chad Tracy, good stuff, man. Hopefully this keeps up. You're making it interesting. As I said, it's been so weird how the American League has been. And, you know, despite the way things started, I mean, you're just a couple of games, like four games now out of the wild card. And if you continue to beat good teams, that makes it even better. So good luck.
Yeah, I think it's important. That's important. That part's important. Keep, you know, the part about it, at least, you know, reinvigorating interest, you know, like I think, you know, as of a few weeks ago, people were pretty down on us. So reinvigorating interest on the team is important too. But like you said, I know you were going to wrap, but we have to keep doing it. We have to keep doing it for a period of time.
Yeah, definitely. And it's been, as I said, it's been entertaining to watch as well. Awesome. Thank you, Chad, for coming on with us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You got it.
All right. See you, Chad.
All right, guys.
Red Sox manager Chad Tracy is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, The name to know when your drains don't flow. I thought my friend had good taste, and then he mentioned that Field of Dreams was the best baseball movie, and I want to vomit.
I don't think it's the best baseball movie, but it does have Burt Lancaster in his last role, Moonlight Grant.
He was, the ghost baseball player who couldn't like go back into the game. But, dude, you're ghosts. You can make your own rules.
I'm not embarrassed
to say. And then Timothy Busfield tried to murder that kid.
Oh, yeah.
He, killed him. Tried to kill a kid, and, everyone's just like, oh, but baseball.
Definitely overrated. Sandlot, however, is absolutely phenomenal.
God, I'm going to disagree with
sappy,
you on that, too.
But it's so good. And Bull Durham's really good, and Moneyball's really good. Those should all be in the conversation.
You know which one is underrated is 8 Men Out.
Oh, that's classic.
Yes. 8 Men Out is unbelievable.
That's Bradford's favorite.
Okay, well, then he's got a good day. And Bull Durham is very good. You see, the Sandlot, you know what? I saw that years after everyone had seen it, and I wasn't a kid anymore either when I saw it.
You don't have to be a kid to see it.
I know, but it's like... I don't know. When it became a cartoon, when the big dog showed up, I was... I'm not going to kill it too much because it's a kid's movie. You know, it's like saying Angels in the Outfield sucks. It's a kid's movie, you know?
Not a kid's movie.
I did like the one... What was the one where the kid's arm got, triggered?
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year was all right. That was your dream come true when you were a kid. Oh, yeah, Rookie of the Year.
By the way, sneaky good Dennis Leary appearance in Sandlot. He's like the evil dad, the evil stepdad or whatever.
Who had the baseball that was signed Yeah. As I said, Sandlot's not a bad movie. It's just, it's not my favorite. Major League, the first one, is just fantastic. It's great.
Hard to top.
And The Natural is so manipulative, and it's so stupid when he hits the sign, and all the stuff comes down, the lights, but I don't care. I'm into it. That's a movie that I know I'm being manipulated. I know it's sap. I like The Natural.
See, some things you go for and some you don't. It's strange.
I know. It's strange.
Counting Crows, sappy. You should just give them their time. I mean, you don't have such a visceral reaction that you walk out of the room when somebody mentions them.
No, just the Counting Crows
yet The Natural you're fighting.
Around here. Long December.
I like a long December.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for it.
Musician.
I don't know. Who knows? Somebody says Summer Catch with peak Jessica Biel.
Oh, well. Summer Catch.
Filmed right here on the Cape, if I'm not mistaken.
Got a local time.
Somebody said, if you don't like Field of Dreams, you hate your dad.
I mean, come on. I can't believe your take on Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams is awful.
It is overrated.
It's awful.
Sure.
Hey, the guy that threw the kid off the stands is now in jail for for other things that he did bad.
The dude from 30-something. That's right. And it's funny. It's like you could say, well, The Natural's sappy. Yeah, but for some reason I like The Natural. I didn't like Field of Dreams.
A lot of Bull Durham on the text line.
Bull Durham's a good movie. Bull Durham's a very good movie. I like that a lot.
Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears was pretty funny. That was pretty good. It was basketball. Yeah, basketball. I remember basketball. That was all right. That was the one with... the South Park guys, and I think Bob Costas got all Randy in that. All right, 617-779-7937.
You're excited to feel these nipples.
That was great. That was a very funny line. All right, we'll be right back.